Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is produced in part by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 225 of the podcast with Andy Rash, author-illustrator of Archie the Daredevil Penguin. My introduction to Archie was through Andy's amazing book trailer, in which he sings Barbershop Quartet with himself. Though I've known him for his awesome pixel art Ioticons before that. This picture book is amazing, and whenever I read it to a group of students, we all crack up. It's just wonderful that way. And it turns out, so is Andy. Enjoy the chat. Here's episode number 225 of the podcast with Andy Rash. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Andy Rash. I am so excited to talk to you today.
Oh, thanks very much, Matthew. I'm very excited to be here.
You are so kind. You are so kind. Oh, my word. Okay, Andy, you wrote a book that I became obsessed with, and I love when that happens. So can I please tell you a little story so that I can sort of quasi-introduce people listening to your book, but also tell you at the same time that I'm obsessed with your book?
Sure, please, proceed. Right.
So sometimes I get emails from publishers, which is great, and they're like, can we send you this book? Or they're like, we mailed you a book, surprise, it's on your doorstep, what do you think of it? And in this case, it was that I got this random book called Archie the Daredevil Penguin, and then I was like, oh, Andy Rash, I know this name from, well, you and I were talking off recording, that mm-hmm. I said I knew you right away from the book you did with Aaron Reynolds, the superhero school one. But I read this book and sort of made it a part of our bedtime routine for a while. Just, hey, Jonah, buddy, we got a couple more books to read. Do you want to read Penguin again? I mean, you've got Penguin. He has a penguin doll in his hands. He always has Penguin that he goes to bed with. And so this was a story that was like made for our bedtime, and it is hilarious, Andy. It is so wonderful. It's amazing. Thank you for making it.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for reading it over and over and indoctrinating your youth.
that is exactly what has happened. Before I maybe it's already happened, but perhaps before I nerd out too much over Archie the Daredevil Penguin, do you mind if I just give you a chance to share a little bit about the book? What, give us a book talk, a synopsis of the story.
Okay. Archie the Daredevil Penguin is a penguin who has a secret fear. He is afraid of the water and all the strange creatures who lurk in the briny deep, and he covers for that with outrageous stunts all the time. He's always trying to fly, and specifically he's trying to fly over to Iceberg 9, which is a where all the other penguins have fish fries and parties. And so it's basically, he's a kind of a cross between Evil Knievel and Wile E. Coyote and a penguin. And he's just trying his best to use all kinds of crazy contraptions and stunts to fly.
That there it is. The Evil Knievel meets Wile E. Coyote. If you don't mind, I'd like to read to you your opening of the book.
Absolutely.
To also give a sense to the listeners. So much of this, I think the entire thing, is told through dialogue.
Yes,
which works out really well.
Dialogue and sound effects.
And sound effects. There it is. And
no
sound
effects. Exposition in this book.
So we start. Hey, Archie, let's all swim over to Iceberg 9 and have a fish fry. Swim? No thanks, fellows. If my latest invention works, I'll fly over. I mustn't let those penguins know that I am afraid of water and the strange creatures who lurk in the briny deep. I think Archie might be afraid of the water and the strange creatures who lurk in the briny deep. Archie the Daredevil Penguin? That's crazy. That
is very funny to hear. You know, I've got earphones in, you know, like to hear someone else read this, because that was just the way I read it, you know, with the same pauses and
everything.
Oh,
that's awesome.
It's very interesting to hear other people read the story. People who've read it more than once.
I think that somewhere in my DNA, from probably locked in from childhood and watching so much Monty Python and something, I don't know what, whatever my dad did, I love, my favorite jokes almost always are when one character says something and another character almost literally word for word repeats what the character said. Yeah. That is like my favorite thing ever. And yeah, there's so much humor like that in this story. How far did I fly? 7 feet or 22 feet straight down.
Yeah.
That kind of humor is just wonderful. I love the your sense of humor in that way.
There's a limited amount of space in a 40-page picture book. And, you know, Archie's deepest, darkest fears, you know, that he has in a thought bubble, not a word bubble, a thought bubble, where he's thinking to himself, I mustn't be found out. But it is immediately guessed by one of the other penguins, one of his friends. So, you know, now that we've got that out of the way, that the suspicion is there and that he's still trying to hide this this fear, you know, you can... You know, you have to be economical with these 40-page books. So,
but to
establish it.
Exactly. To establish it that early on, though, is so wonderful. I feel like it's the tell right away that almost, I mean, when I think of my students all the time, I think of my kids all the time, and I think of, like, how much we try to hide stuff from one another when it's so obvious that it's you, or that people know you for being that way, and it's okay. And not that this book was set out to be, you know, a book to teach children about being okay with yourself and knowing that everyone will love you no matter who you are. But to be able to get that out of the way right away, I think gives you an in immediately with your audience. And when I've shared it with my students, not that I've ever asked them that directly, I probably ought to, but I do feel like they buy into the story right away because of phrases like that in the beginning. And it's not even that it's just a joke in the beginning. I think it is a joke, but I think it's also a truth hidden within a joke.
Yeah, well, that's where the best jokes are. I mean, the idea that, you know, he all this time he could have trusted his friends with the truth, you know, and he actually would have probably solved his problem sooner. You know, it wouldn't be quite as interesting a story, but, you know, he can... And it shows in the book, he can trust his friends, you know, even if he is ashamed of something about himself, that he's afraid of something. And yeah, I mean, it works as a joke because it, like, this subterfuge is utterly failing, just like everything else that Archie tries to do throughout the book. But yeah, that there is something there. That, you know, just you can trust your friends. I mean, this is a lesson you have to learn over and over throughout your life, you know, is that people are not going to judge you nearly as harshly as you ever expect that they will.
You can trust your friends. There's the theme of the book.
There it was. I was worried
you
we wouldn't find one.
You can trust your friends. I think that works in such a beautiful way too, for when you look at the way that picture books are meant to appeal to that dual audience, to the child and to the adult reading to the child at the same time. That issue of trust and of perception of others on yourself and how you are your harshest critic is something that doesn't go away.
That's right. No, it never stops.
And I'm sure that we don't even need to get into the therapy bench here over Andy as an illustrator. Do you ever feel comfortable with your ability? I can say as a teacher, I had my formal observation today, and still I question, 11 years into teaching, wait, am I doing okay? Am I an all right teacher?
Yeah. Every 10 years I'll make an image that I'll really feel like I nailed it. And that feeling will sustain me for the next 10 years of failure.
Well, that it's good to know that sadly it is 10 years, but at least it's a strong enough image that it is a 10 year sustaining image.
That's right.
I when I saw this book too, it was making me think a lot of, I talked some time ago to Colleen A.F. Venable, who at the time, she wrote graphic novels, but also was an art director for First Second, for comics, First Second.
Mm-hmm.
And she said this insightful thing that I've just never, ever forgotten, which is that a picture book is a graphic novel. It's just a graphic novel zoomed in. We're looking at frames. We're looking at, it's a comic zoomed in. And in this story in Archie, I feel like not only do you have paneled artwork, but I feel like it progresses in such a great way that way too, that it just seems like everything is blocked out, that you weren't looking at, okay, how can I accomplish this in, I don't know, 16 spreads or 32 pages? But rather you were talking about the economy of the 40 pages that you had to work with.
Right.
And when is it time to have a full spread, a full bleed too on the spread? And when is it time to just break it up into smaller frames? I like that pacing that you approach
it. To me, it's like so much about what picture books are about. It's like when, that page turn is like, in a graphic novel, that might just be the next panel, that makes that kind of transition. But the page turns have to, there's so much rhythm to it.
Oh, yeah.
Especially if you're setting up something that has a punchline or something like that, and you don't want it to all be there on the page. You want a slight beat as you're having to drag that page over, turn the page, and then you get to whatever the next thing is. That's what, we were talking before we started recording about the difference between writing, longer form versus picture books.
Right.
And to
middle
me,
grade and such, yeah.
Like picture books, like you pretty quickly, for me, need to be doing thumbnails. You need to be doing like visual sketches and planning out how pages lay out. When I first did Archie, it was intended, my first pass at this was it was going to be completely wordless. It was just going to be, just a silent, like a silent film of a penguin trying to do things. And after a while, I felt like I just couldn't say everything I wanted to say, so I added in word balloons and sound effects and all that kind of thing. But it started out you're just trying to say absolutely everything with the images, and you put in the words where they're needed.
There but you I, go. Putting in the words where they're needed, as opposed to just like, all right, well, I know picture book manuscripts are supposed to have about 500 words, so let's get to that target.
yeah. It's not like that at all. I've done some illustrated some manuscripts for some other people, and it's interesting the kinds of problems that can crop up. Like I did a book where there were a lot of word balloons, and on one spread, there was no other way to rearrange this book. There was one spread where 9 different characters were speaking with word balloons. And it's, if you're just writing it in text, it looks just fine, especially if you're accustomed to longer format books. But if you have 9 crisscrossing word balloons with 9 different characters speaking on a spread, that's a lot.
That's a lot, yeah.
And you have, sometimes you have to approach the author and it's like, could we tighten this up just a little bit, you know?
Right. I mean, you have to consider the audience and how they're going to read it and how they're going to read it aloud and
yes,
and all of that. And I think about, you know, you've got these great like stacked word bubbles of different characters talking, and you've got you know, noting when it's Archie by adding a tint to the bubble. And the only time when you've got, I was just thinking as you were saying that, I was like, wait, you have a time when a lot of characters talk too, but it's arranged in such a great way that my eyes can sort of go where they want to go, which is in the briny deep at the end when there are lots of other characters talking to Archie. I won't give away whatever's happening.
Yes.
But there's sort of this notion of whenever I see all that, this is going to be horrible to think of this in a picture book, but whenever I see all that, I always wonder, how much is a kid going to read on this page? And is it okay if they don't read every single bubble?
Yeah.
Or not? And I think that there needs to be a little forgiveness there when, you know, there's lots of illustrators and authors that like to add lots of sort of little side note stuff in there, which is a great thing to have. But is it necessary to move the story forward? I guess it makes me think of like Laurie Keller in her wonderful Scrambled States of America book has, if you read every single note in that book, it could take you, you know, like twice as long or something to read that picture book, which is great because for the kid that wants to read that, there's so much more there to love and understand and enjoy. And if you wanted to just do a solid read aloud of it, it's sort of clearly noted that you can read just this main text and go through. And I like that in your story, not to take away from your hard work, but there are these moments when it's, my eyes can train on the illustration here, or at the end at that one point, my eyes can sort of circle around in whatever manner that I want to. You're allowing me, the reader, the freedom to just read what I want.
Well, you got to have a lot of sympathy for you know, especially parents who are opening up a picture book for the first time. You know, they just got out of the library or whatever, and they're sitting down with their kid, and their kid, you know, if their kid is you know, but younger than reading age, like at the very least, you want the book to be able to be scanned easily, you know, by the parent. I mean, at the very least, let's have some clarity. And if vital parts of the plot are scattered all over the page, or if it's a rhyming book and you can't figure out what was the meter supposed to be, you know, do you ever read like poetry and then it's just like, oh no, that isn't how they wanted me to read that line.
Yeah, and it takes you out of the whole thing.
Then you have to, you know, I mean, there are a few people that can just, they have their poetry meter absolutely down, and you know, you never mess it up, you know, but most of the time that's not true. And it's kind of a similar thing with the layouts, you know.
Yes.
On that page in question, there honestly isn't really a necessary order of the things being said by all those creatures, you know. I mean, like, it flows a little bit better if you read, you know, top to bottom, left to right, but you could pick and choose them, you know, or read them in pretty much any order. And on that one page, it doesn't matter. But for the other ones with a bunch of penguins all gathered around in a Last Supper motif, you know, those word bubbles are all stacked very rigidly, you know, because the order that the penguins are speaking is very, very important to the humor and the gist of the story.
You know, to go back to again that end section, just to share with people listening, I know that I'm talking to adults for the most part. There are some children that will listen, which is great, but part that I want to reach out to for adults in that last section that we're referring to that I loved more than anything, Andy, and hopefully you've had a chance to experience this with the kids you're reading to, or maybe it's something I get to share with you, is that page and the page preceding it is, my students ask me to flip back and forth over and over on that, because the images, the character, the multiple characters that you have that end up talking correspond in the page prior to that.
Yes.
In, and you have them drawn. I can't even, I'm going to give everything away. It doesn't matter. It's awesome. The way that you have them drawn, it feels like this wonderful, like Chuck Close, you know, nod there, this notion of like things in the dark that look scary. And when we turn on the light, we, it turns out they're fine. Yes. That flip is so good. And then following it, my, one of my other favorite layouts is that you've got Archie in a loose panel, following him through these like arrow shaped panels around the page. And there's just like wonderful sense of motion on that spread. It's so good.
Yeah. It's like when you have problems, when you have things, you know, like that you really want to do, like you want to have like Archie surfacing and going, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And he's just like, gosh, I don't have the room to show all this. How can I, how can I contrive this page? And yeah, for people who haven't seen the book, this it will make absolutely no sense. But it's, yeah, there's an organic flow of panels.
Well, I think, okay, I'm going to have a great segue here. But first, I have to lay on one more thing that I love, which is that the best way I know how to say it, and you'll understand what I mean, is that the lighting in this, in your illustrations, specifically the time of day that you're illustrating, throughout, that we go from a sunrise to a sunset, and the colors that you use to depict daylight and I guess moonlight in some case, is so nice to look at. Thank you. Pinks and blues and the oranges and yellows. That was something too that I think really spoke to me. I mean, you've got a penguin, or penguins, so you've got black and white. Yes. You've got, you know, the Arctic, so you've got blue and white. The way to work in more color there is wonderful. But then I was going to say, you know, as a segue for people that haven't read this book yet or haven't seen this book yet, you've got such a strong way for people to get into it, which is your amazing book trailer sung in like three or four part harmony.
Four part harmony.
Yes.
Three of those penguins are me. And the fourth is a very talented guy named Bob Joran. And yeah, that was all recorded just down the street from here.
I love that trailer. Is this something that you, are you just a musical person? Do you find yourself writing songs for all of your books? Or
absolutely not. This is the first song I've ever written.
Thank you. Good. I love it. Oh my word. There needs to be more. But anyway, on that note,
I did that animation. I Nickelodeon called me up to do some IotaCon like. Station ID bumpers, you know, Nickelodeon, those kinds of things.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
And so, and they said, do you know how to do that? And I knew how to do animated GIFs, you know, things like that. But like, I figured, well, I have After Effects. I could probably figure it out. So, you know, I ended up doing five or six of those for them and just trying to train myself as quickly as possible and just learn exactly what I needed to learn and nothing extra. And then once I had done all that, you know, like tackling that book trailer, the only thing that was concerning me was the music, because I knew how to do the animation and stuff. And so I was at a library event and I just asked the group, I showed them my rough cut of my animation and I said, does anybody here, and I sang along with it because it had the bouncing ball and the lyrics and everything, and I knew what the tune was. And so I just sang along with the theme, and then I said, does anyone here know anything about barbershop quartet, or are you in a chorus? Do you know anything about music recording? I mean, I am adrift. I've got to get this done. I don't know how to do it. If anyone knows any, and not a peep. But then one of my neighbors from down the street, he was driving home from the event. He was nice enough to come out with his wife, and his wife was just staring at him in the car, and she said, well, are you going to help Andy with his thing or not? And I found out afterwards, he called up and he said, you know that thing you were asking about at the library? That's exactly what I do. And it's like, wow. And so,
whoa.
Yeah. So he's down the street from me. He's, you know, he's like essentially like an audio engineer in his spare time.
Oh, that's amazing. What a perfect connection.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, you know, I just went down the street a few times and sang in falsetto and, you know, that was about it.
Well, you accomplished such, you know, what you accomplished through that book trailer in the way that you're able to tell the story a different way or engage the audience a different way. That really, I think, speaks to how strong of a storyteller you are, for one, but also how strong you are at being able to engage an audience. Because I think of the entry to that material that way, or of reading the book and then going back and watching that trailer, to have that and having a song, that's such a cool thing to be able to have another thing to go along with this book.
And it's been, man, massively useful. I've been visiting schools, doing some, you know, library and store events and things. And last week I was at an elementary school and they had clearly prepped everybody, because I tend to show that thing toward the beginning. You know, I actually, you know, it depends on which kind of thing I'm doing. But sometimes I'll show that thing toward the beginning, ask everybody to you know, to pay attention to the tune. And because it's got the bouncing ball lyrics thing, the karaoke deal, I tell them, oh, well, then we'll sing it together later on. But they all knew it the first time, you know, so they had all clearly, you know, seen this video and perhaps more than once. And can you imagine that?
And that's like, awesome. That experience for you to walk in and just to have everyone singing your song back to you. But I think it's a trailer though, that you put on your library website, give kids the location for them to go and see it over and over, and they will.
Yeah.
I think it's great. I think it's really wonderful that you shared that. I'm glad you did. And hey, you brought up your IotaCons, which is another neat connection that we have in that way. Actually, I not only love pixel art, but post-it note art, and your IotaCons sort of get at all of that great stuff too. Where did making these wonderful images start for you?
Back in the 80s, you know, like back when my computer was about as good as it could do. And then I think this was around 2009 or somewhere around there. And I was just thinking, boy, that was really fun. And I started doing that in, you know, like in Photoshop again, and just trying to make as small a likeness as I could. And I just got into a habit of doing it. And I have a blog that has IotaCons. What is it? IotaCons.blogspot.com or something like that.
Oh, okay.
I have all kinds of things that I have done there. And then I also post, people make all kinds of crafts. And like people make cutting boards and quilts and pillows and little fuse, you know, plastic fuse bead art. And the guy Invader, you know, the street artist.
Right.
Yeah, he
who does he's put up like the Pac-Man ghosts.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He's a French street artist and a, you know, kind of a friend of Banksy, and is also featured in that documentary or whatever it is called, Exit Through the Gift Shop. He put up my IotaCon designs of Luke Skywalker and Darth Vader on the side of a parking garage in London. They're 12 feet high. And
woo.
Utterly ill, you know, he did not have permission to do that. And it's like, and he didn't contact me before or anything like that. You know, somebody said, hey, isn't this you? And sent me a photo from, you know, Shoreditch, which is in East London. And so, I mean, I've gotten the opportunity to design mosaics for bathrooms and restaurants and yeah, all kinds of things. And it's just this bizarre little side project.
That's it. You started doing this like around 2009. Do you keep it up, I don't know, weekly or something?
It's
How
not as
regularly?
regular as
Okay,
that, you know,
okay.
like usually, I mean, lots of times I'm like busy with other things, but I've illustrated books with Iotacons too. There's a book called Game Over Pete Watson. That's a it's a chapter book, and it has Iotacons all the way through there. And I do it for magazines and newspapers too. I have to say that the thing that I post most often is when a celebrity dies, I end up doing a portrait of them and put it. I don't know why I compulsively do that, but I, you know,
Really?
it's just if it's a celebrity who, you know, who, especially someone who meant a lot to me, you know, I'll do a portrait of them. And so there's, you know, hundreds of posts on there, but I definitely don't have a regular schedule for it.
That's awesome, though. Where does the name Iotacon come from? Is that something that you made up, or is that like the
It
official
is.
name?
No, it's something I made up.
Okay.
It's basically like a combination. It's a portmanteau
Ooh, yes.
of icon and iota, you know, like not one iota,
Yeah.
just a small little dot. So that's, you know, I just put it together and called them Iotacons, and it's been living as a blog for a long time now.
Nice. Love it. Sweet. Well, my word. You are a busy guy and have awesome things going on. I'm sure you've got a million billion other things in the works, but I also know that it's a new school year. So hopefully you're getting out and seeing lots and lots of kids, and Archie is getting to meet lots and lots of kids,
Yes,
and
this is a busy season for that.
that's
You know, it's like
good.
because the book just came out, and I've been lucky enough to get a lot of very nice visits to elementary schools and you know, stores and things like that. So it's going very well. It's
Well,
been a lot of fun.
that's awesome, Andy, and I'm really, really thankful that our paths crossed and that we
Me too.
got to talk, 'cause you're awesome.
Oh, thank you.
And I love you even more knowing the person behind the book, and love the book even more knowing the person behind it. It's
Well,
really
thanks, man.
great to make that connection, Andy. Before I let you go, I feel like we've been talking the entire time about these wonderful, important people in your life and in my life, which is great. But we've set the stage for this final question.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I'd
Right.
love to know what one person you would want on your team, alive or past, from the Kidlit world and why.
Well, I'm not sure that this person I'm not sure that this person counts as kid lit, but he definitely worked a lot in picture books. I think I'd like to have Edward Gorey.
Oh, definitely. Yes, without question. Why for you, Edward Gorey?
I have been just a giant fan of his stuff for a very long time. I don't know if his skills you know, would translate to kickball that well, but I had an opportunity to meet him briefly, and I was I don't know, I was absolutely awestruck. It was absolutely, you know, like hero, like overwhelmed by, you know, like the idea of like that I was being able to talk to him. So, you know, to get him back on the earth, you know, get him out there on the field, I think that'd be a whole lot of fun.
Well, I think you have good sensibilities about you, and you know how to keep good people close, which is a good thing, Andy. Thank you again for coming on, and best of luck with the school year and all the other stuff you have in the works. I hope to get to talk to you again soon.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot, Matthew.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and the Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Kwame Alexander talks about The Crossover as well as Surf's Up, his new picture book illustrated by Daniel Miaris. And later in the week, Fred Bowen shares the story behind Out of Bounds and his other great sports fiction. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.